This is the Hiking Through Life podcast. We've all been gifted a journey called life. Let's see where the journey leads us today.
Do you believe in magic?
We do. After we went on our first backpacking trip with two kids under two, we were questioning how on earth we were going to backpack more than one night with two young ones. The gear, carrying the babies, all the pack weight, it's a lot of stuff. But Rory is in the stage of hiking on his own for portions of the trail, and then all of a sudden he sits down and is ready to be carried. You know how this goes. The Trail Magic is the perfect carrier for backpacking families. I'm so excited about this carrier, you guys. It is a carrier designed to attach to your backpacking pack so your child can easily be carried when needed and get back on the trail when needed. The best part is that the Trail Magic carrier folds up to the size of a Nalgene water bottle. Perfect for backpacking.
Use the code HIKE2022 to receive 10% off your order at trailmagic.com. That's magic with a K. Again, the code is HIKE2022, HIKE2022. Use the code for 10% off your order at trailmagic.com and add a little magic to your family's next adventure.
As previous podcast guest Linda McGurk once said, there's no such thing as bad weather, only bad clothing. The Nordic countries know how to dress right for any adventure. If you're looking for a quality set of wool to keep your kids warm, try Ella's Wool. Some reasons to consider wool? It's warm, it regulates moisture, it's water and odor resistant, and provides a natural sunscreen. In addition to the wool, I love the knit legging tubes. The kids practically lived in their knit legging tubes all winter long for an extra warm layer. Use code HIKINGTL2023 to save 10% off your order. That's code HIKINGTL2023 at ellaswool.com to save 10% off your next order.
Welcome to the Hiking Through Life podcast, where we talk with people who in some way, shape, or form have been influenced by the outdoors. I'm Andy, the producer of this podcast, and my lovely wife, Sarah, will be your host. Together, we make up Hiking Through Life.
This podcast is all about bringing all kinds of people who are inspired by the outdoors and sharing their stories.
We hope that by sharing people's stories, it inspires others to get out and live a more meaningful life. Tune in every week for new episodes, or better yet, subscribe to the Hiking Through Life podcast on your favorite podcast provider. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with others. Also, if you have a story to share or know of anyone who might be interested in being a guest on this podcast, head on over to hikingthroughlife.net/podcast and get in touch with us. Now sit back and enjoy this week's episode.
Welcome to the Hiking Through Life podcast. Today on the podcast, we have Amy Bouchatz. Amy is the voice behind the Humans Outside podcast and website. She moved to Alaska with her family in 2016 with a goal in mind to spend more time outdoors. They have successfully lived that goal and mission, and Amy is here to share the family story. Welcome to the podcast, Amy.
Thank you so very much for having me. What a pleasure to join you.
Yes, always fun to have another podcaster and share perspectives. So I want to just like dive into how this kind of all started. I've listened to many of your stories and read some of the stuff about you, but tell us how your Alaska story started, where you guys were living before that. Let's hear it.
Yeah. So I think so often our stories, like the best part of our stories, our life stories start with a crisis, you know, where you're faced with this problematic situation and you just have to figure out what the crap you're going to do to get yourself out of it. And that's really how my story with the outdoors started. My husband was in the active duty Army. We were stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, which is on the border of Kentucky and Tennessee, about 45 minutes, an hour northwest of Nashville. For those of you who are maybe not familiar with the border of Kentucky and Tennessee. But let me just tell you, not a lot going on there, except for Fort Campbell, Kentucky. So the town that we lived in was Clarksville, Tennessee. And it is a beautiful, beautiful area of farmlands and countryside, these sort of rolling hills and rivers, and then the land between the lakes, National Recreation Area, which is, again, on the border of Kentucky and Tennessee, and includes these huge man-made lakes that were part of the Tennessee Valley Authority flooding the area for hydropower during the Great Depression. Okay, just for context. So it's a beautiful, beautiful area. And my husband was really experiencing a crisis. He was dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, what you might know as PTSD. And what we didn't know at the time was a traumatic brain injury from his military service. So that kind of looks like in your house, like outbursts of anger and just being really unsettled and this sort of always this tension in the air. And then also forgetting a lot of stuff, you know, when your brain is injured, weird stuff starts happening. He'd leave the stove on. And I was really at a loss as to how I was going to help my family. I didn't have words for what we were experiencing at that time. All I knew is that things weren't good. And so we started spending time outside as a family. And the more we went outside, the more I noticed he seemed more relaxed. He seemed happier. I felt happier. When you find something that makes you feel good, you want to do it more. So when I saw that he seemed like he was feeling more relaxed every time we went camping, every time we spent time outside as a family, we wanted to do it more. And it came to a point where I realized that, and he realized that, he was not going to get to experience getting better from those injuries without leaving the active duty army, that he just wasn't going to get both the literal and proverbial space that he needed to do that, to really heal. And so we made the decision to get out of the active duty army in 2016. But when you leave the army and you live at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, where you're not from, you have to move somewhere. I mean, or you could stay there, but most people don't. And so it was really this situation where we could move anywhere we wanted. And we didn't have a super compelling reason other than the fact that we like our families to move to where our families are. I was from a beach in California. He was from a farm in Ohio. My family had since relocated to Boise, Idaho. It was just like there wasn't a place for us to go back to per se that we wanted to do. And so we thought, okay, well, where would we like to live? Where could we maybe spend more time outside? That might be a good starting point. And because I have a flair for the dramatic, we decided, let's move to Alaska. So we moved sight unseen to Alaska in 2016. Never had been here before. Bought a house without seeing it. Like, talk about drama. Army put some of our stuff in a truck. We put the rest of our stuff in literally the car, you know, our Volvo station wagon and the dog, and drove to Alaska like pioneers. Very dramatic.
Right.
To Canada, you know?
Well, and so at that time, your kids were like, how old?
Oh gosh. 7 and 4.
Okay.
Because they're about, yeah, because the one of them, my youngest, there's only two, my youngest is about to turn 10. So 7 and 4, going into second grade and second year of pre-K. So yeah, so, you know, we moved up here. We'd never been here before. And my husband immediately ran off into the woods to feel better and spend more time outside. And it was great. And about a year into living here, I realized that it was great for him, it was great for my kids, but I wasn't really doing what I thought I would do here.
Well, and like, you guys had just started getting into the outdoorsy stuff, like, prior to moving there, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I say we went camping as a family, that was the first time. You know, I had never really gone camping before. Every year as a kid, my parents packed my brothers and sisters and I and a whole bunch of snacks into our car and drove a couple, you know, 8 hours north to a cabin, which I realize now in retrospect was a very nice cabin. Electricity, it had a microwave.
So it was glamping to like
glamping, but I didn't know that. I just thought we went to a cabin. Now I spend time in dry cabins with like nothing, you know,
yeah.
See at the outhouse,
and or the hole in the ground.
Yeah. Or the hole in the ground with your shovel. Like, now I realize that was real fancy, but I didn't know that at the time, you know? And so I had no context for camping or anything, roughing it, you know, quote unquote, or anything like that. And so when we moved up here, all of a sudden you live in this outdoorsy place where people just go skiing, you know, backcountry skiing on a Tuesday afternoon after work. And I had never, I mean, I had skied one time ever you know, it's winter here a lot. It'd be good if you knew how to ski. You could get outside more, as I have discovered. So, you know, fast forward to this day in Memorial Day of 2017, it is raining. Okay, raining. And I have this like visceral memory of sitting there at this table in the rain and being so annoyed that I had moved to Alaska to get rained on Memorial Day weekend and being bundled up like, gosh darn it, I am sitting outside. I'm doing this. And it was so gross. And I thought, okay, Amy, like this, Alaska is not going to do what you want it to do. That's not how weather works. You need to change your own attitude about this. And the only way I know how to change my attitude about anything is to create some sort of like personal challenge for myself. Say, okay, we're going to try to do this for a month, or I'm going to do this for a week, see how it goes. And so I decided, okay, listen, Amy, what would happen if you just spent time outside every day now through Labor Day? It's the summer, theoretically. You can you can go outside. It'll be fine. Just time outside every day. No amount of time. Just go do it. So I marched in my house. I ordered some rain gear on the internet for my kids because, you know, I got kids. They got to go with me. And I stuck them in a car and we drove to a nearby hike and we went on this hike and it stopped raining and it was great. We had a great time. It was like a mile and a half. Little time, like basically a nature walk for all practical purposes. Okay.
And so was that like your first real mini adventure that you were experiencing in a positive way?
Yeah. Since we had moved, you know, we had moved here in the summer and then we did a couple of like little adventures around and then the winter came and that was kind of it. Like we maybe took a hike or two over the course of the winter. I mean, not a lot. So that was really like the opening the door on this idea of, you can put your kids in the car. You can go on an adventure. I mean, you could just walk in the backyard if I wanted to, you know, like you can go outside. Weather doesn't have to be perfect. It was kind of a rainy day. The rain cleared. We had a great time. Nobody got wet. Nobody fell down a cliff. Nobody had a meltdown. It was great. So I realized that in that moment that it was my attitude that was keeping me from doing this stuff. And so I just decided we're going to do this through Labor Day. And we did. I went outside every day, Memorial Day through Labor Day. Sometimes that was literally just 5 minutes. I decided it would be nice if we just used this opportunity to kind of explore around where we lived. We tried a new park here, went for a walk on the river there, you know, had a picnic over here, made an effort, made it fun for myself and for my kids, you know, just called it the summer of fun and just went outside. Okay, well, Labor Day rolled around and I was not ready to stop going outside. In fact, what I wanted to know was how this would impact me if I did it for a year. And I wanted to know how it would impact me if I did it for a year and for a certain amount of time every day. Because in the interim, I'd done some research and I had found that at the time there was limited studies, but the ones that there were said that a good quote unquote dosage of time outside was about 15-20 minutes a day. It's now we call, you know, now scientists have studies out saying that it's about 2 hours a week total.
Yeah. And now they call it forest bathing.
And that was a thing then too.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, it's forest bathing is really like a practical out, you know, being in the trees, doing a sit spot, having practical meditation. That's great. That's included in what I'm doing, but that's not just what I'm doing. You know, I want to just be like flat out, wham, bam, 20 minutes outside a day, minimum, you know, it could be more. What does that do for you? I don't want to have to be in a forest. I want to make that include, if you're traveling, walking around the drop-off area of the airport, that's outside, sure better than being in the airport, you know? And so I thought, okay, let's do this for a year. See what happens. Can you make it through the winter? ? What will that look like? How many new things will you try? What is that like? So I started logging my daily outdoor time on Instagram, just sort of as accountability for myself. And I started September 1st, 2017. That's the line. Okay. 20 minutes a day after that, even though I'd been doing a little bit of time outside every day since Memorial Day. And I mean, the rest is history. Spoiler alert, did not stop at a year. It's now been way over 4 years, over 1600 days in a row that I spent time outside every day for minimum 20 minutes, sometimes a lot more than that. Sometimes right on the mark, by the way. So like, has it been 20 minutes yet? Because not every day is beautiful and not every day is pleasant. And some days really are in the drop-off area of the airport. And, you know, that's nice, but it's maybe the weather's not great and there's a lot of exhaust and going out back inside doesn't sound like a bad idea. Right. And then, you know, I also decided like, hey, I kind of want to, this is too good to keep to yourself. So let's share it with other people. I'm a journalist. That's what I do. And that's why I have the Humans Outside podcast, to talk about this experience with other people.
Right. Well, and just like you said, like getting outside can sometimes be a struggle, even if you like going outside the majority of your time. Like the weather can make it bad. Where you are can make it a tough experience. Like it can be hard, but chances are like after that 20 minutes that you spend, like you probably like do feel rejuvenated most of the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can't even think of a time that I don't feel rejuvenated. You know, yeah. There's not every day is going to be your best day ever outside, right? Like that's not possible. So every day would have to be continuously better. That's not how weather works, the same way as you can't make it be nice. But I don't know that there's ever been a day that I regret, you know, like they're all better than not going outside.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, I just think that's crazy that like the place that you guys chose to go is to Alaska of all places. And then like, just kind of like your attitude you had about it at first was just like, well, I don't know, I'm sitting here in the rain. Like of all places you could have gone. I mean, did you guys consider other places at all? Or were you just like, nope, this is it? Was Luke the big like pull in that? Or was it both of you?
Yeah, you know, okay, so he had, well, first of all, when the world is your oyster, it's too many oysters, yep. Okay? You have to, like, whittle it down too much. So how do you do that? How do you even do that? And even saying, oh, we want to make going outside a priority. How do you even, like, you could do that anywhere. So how do you even do that, okay? So we thought about the fact that we did really enjoy living in the Seattle area. We liked the vibe. We liked the weather. We didn't mind that.
Well,
It rains there a lot, but we didn't mind it. It was pretty, you know, we kind of liked it there. We had good friends there. And we had some friends we had there that also had been stationed up here in Alaska who really liked it. And so we got to thinking about the fact that pretty much anyone we'd ever heard of getting stationed in this particular area really liked it. And ultimately said it was somewhere they would like to go back to. And so that definitely factored in, you know, rumors of Alaska. It's like very pioneer. Have you heard about the Oregon Trail? Yeah. Okay. So that factored in. And then he decided he wanted to do a master's degree in outdoor and environmental education because he wanted to work with other veterans to go outside, which is now something that he does through a nonprofit that he helped found called Remedy Alpine. But there are very, at the time at least, limited numbers of degree programs, accredited degree programs that do that in a master's level. Lots of places do undergrad for outdoor education. Very few do a master's level. And so Alaska Pacific University, which accepted his GI Bill funding from his military service, is one of the few schools that does that. He applied to several. And he got into this one, and we had pretty much put this as the top of our list at the time anyway. There was a program at the time, I think it was in somewhere in Washington State, that had as part of their degree program living out in some, I don't even remember where, part of a national park, in student housing. And that wasn't, we would have to have lived separately as a family. So that wasn't really a great option.
Especially when you're like trying to heal your family.
Right. And the nearest school was like an hour bus ride a day, you know, if you stuck your kid on the bus kind of thing. It just wasn't a sustainable option for young kids. And so that was really off the table. There were other factors that went into it. But at the end of the day, if he had wanted to do he could have picked a different degree program. We could live on a beach in Florida, but we don't. So what was I thinking?
Right. Well, I mean, it's obviously worked out super well for you guys. And like you probably don't regret living there whatsoever now.
No, I really don't. Although I do think that it is a lot to do with attitude. How things work out for you where you are can be driven by how you choose to look at it. So and this is sort of a lesson I guess I picked up in military life as a military spouse, because you live where the military tells you to live, and you don't really have a lot of choice in that. And whether you like it or not, it's going to really be up to how you choose to look at it. And so I want, now this is very easy to say as somebody who moved herself to Alaska to spend more time outside, but no matter where you are, there is outdoors accessible to you. It just is a matter of your perspective. For me, it took moving all the way up to Alaska to realize that that's true. Moving away from Clarksville, Tennessee was important to us because of the things that had happened there to our family and our associations to that place. The region itself is fantastic for spending time outside. It is a beautiful place to live. It's just not somewhere that my family really could have, you know, healed and created that space, but we could have moved an hour down the road and had a fine time, you know? So.
Right. Right. But it's just like having such a fresh start can totally change right. your perspective on things.
Absolutely. And, you know, as in terms of being able to make the most of wherever you live, there's this wonderful, wonderful book by a gal named Melody Warnick. I just love her. So I've had her as a guest on my podcast. She wrote a book called This Is Where You Belong, and it's about learning to love where you live. And so she has really laid out these ways that are scientifically proven to help you to be a factor in people liking where they live. So things like walkability and having a local hangout, you know, somewhere you'd like to go over and over again for coffee, or spending time in nature where it is, wherever you are. And she experienced this herself as someone who moved a lot, although not with the military, but I really related to that. And I took her book and I kind of used it as a way to teach me to like where I lived. And in the function of that, I realized that you can do that anywhere you are. And it's like every day outside. Not every day is going to be your favorite outside. Not every place you live is going to be the place you like the most. That's just how science works. But you can learn to find things about it that you really like. And so I love living here. It is my favorite place. I'm not going anywhere. But part of that is attitude. You know, in January, Alaska's not that fun. It's really dark. You're kind of over it. The weather's terrible. It can be, where I live, extremely windy. This January, like January 1st, we had a windstorm that was essentially 2 to 3 days of hurricane force winds the whole time. So imagine being in a hurricane for 3 days.
Well, what was your outside time for those days?
So our wind, big wind, lasted really 2.5 days. On day one, we heard the windstorm was coming. I had no context for what this meant at the time, by the way, but we went skiing in the morning. We like went before it hit. Okay. Day two.
I mean, were you guys the only people skiing, or were other people like out there too?
Some other people out there. Yeah. There's some other people out there. Day two, big wind. Okay. And our power had gone out. We went, so I had determined, okay, first of all, I thought, can I find somewhere that is not windy? Can we drive somewhere? Because there's a portion of where I live that for whatever reason is really protected from the wind. But the police had issued like stay home orders. Semis were flipping over on the road. I mean, it was like a situation, okay? Stuff was blowing, like pieces of buildings were coming apart. So there was stuff blowing all throughout, like you're driving down the road and get hit by a 2x4 kind of thing. No, thank you. So decided to stay home. So then I was like, okay, if I go in my front yard and look around, there's a spot on my house that is has an encircled with snowbank, right? That blew in. Okay. But like portion of it does not like that. So it's clearly protected from the wind. Okay. So I was like, I'm just going to sit there, put on all my jackets and sit on this bench and just be outside. Well, okay. So I go outside to do this and my husband and kids come out. Okay. And they're like, we're going for a walk. So they start up the hill, into the wind. And what we ended up doing was I spent about maybe 10 minutes all told of my 20 minutes sitting on this bench, hiding from the wind. Okay. Like just essentially watching the world go by, literally, because stuff is flying by my house. And then the other 10 minutes I guess we blew down the hill because that's the wind was coming, but we struggled up the hill and just stood in the wind. It was an incredible experience. You know, we should have put on some goggles because my husband had to take my picture with his eyes closed because the wind was blowing into his eyes. But I have this great picture of me, like, basically about to, you can see, like, my hair and my stuff is, like, blowing away from my jacket in this photo. And I'll tell you right now, 100% would not have been outside in the windstorm if I wasn't doing my 20 minutes outside. And I'm so glad I have that experience, because what an incredible thing. I've never stood outside in 100 mile winds before. Haven't done it.
Exactly. Like, yeah, like the memories you get from that and the stories you get from that.
It's great. Yeah, it's incredible. And then we blew our way back down the hill because, you know, so that's how wind works. Okay. And then I will confess, on day 3, the wind was still really bad at my house. It had died down in several other parts and things were not, you know, everything had blown by already. And so all the 2x4s had already blown through. We got in the car and we drove down to Anchorage about 45 minutes away. Went for a walk in the park, ran some errands, went to a movie. The power was out in my house and it was cold. We were just over it. So we did our outdoor time somewhere else, but that was a great memory though. As you said, we would never have experienced that. And so the function of doing outdoor time every day, in addition to having so many ways that it changes your life, increases your happiness, all of these scientifically proven ways, because you're experiencing new things every day, whether you're looking for them or not. Okay, like you don't have to be actively searching for new experiences to experience new things outside literally every time you step your foot outside, because outside is always changing independent of your desire for it to do so or not.
Uh-huh.
So you go outside, you're constantly experiencing new things. And the factor of that you are in this way of that you're putting yourself outside, therefore open to new things in a way you probably would never be in your inside life. Because hello, new things are really hard. New things take a lot of energy. New things take a lot of resilience. I don't like new things. I like habits. Obviously, I go outside every day. I like patterns. I like schedules. I am not a person who I would say is open to new things. But when I go outside every day, I am building a practice and a stomach for experiencing new things that are out of my control. So when I come back inside and things happen that are out of my control, I am automatically, because of this practice, having an easier time of accepting them, because I know that it's okay. Windstorms come, windstorms go. We're fine.
Right. I mean, just the whole outside perspective, that's what it's done for me too. Just like realizing things are constantly changing. There's going to be challenges in everything you do in life, but you'll be okay and you'll get through it. And like you said, like, yeah, this, I think that's what's so fascinating about the outside every day. Like the weather is literally, it's March, but like it's, yeah, the winter is so up and down here.
Yeah, I have snow drifts from this windstorm that I don't think are going to melt until October.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would have, last week it was sort of spring-like. I think there is a tree in my neighbor's yard in front of my house that there might be like cottonwood buds on. But by the time I got out there to check it out, because we went out of state for a couple of days, came back, I was like, I got to look, make sure this tree is actually budding. It's not my imagination. It had snowed. And so now, I mean, it snowed like 6-7 inches. Okay. So now the cottonwood buds have snow on them and I can't tell if it's just the tree with snow on it or there's actually something going on there. So, you know, to be announced, it might be spring. We can't tell. So... But that's this time of year, you know, and when I go outside tomorrow, it's like 35 degrees today. Okay. So all of that snow could melt. That's sunny. And maybe I will find the cottonwood buds and that will be something new for me to see. Won't that be fun for me?
So it's sunny, but in the winter, isn't it dark there all the time? Or it's officially not winter. It's like in between.
So Alaska is humongous. There's really no other way to put it. And it's hard to understand how humongous it is until you come here. It is more than twice the size of Texas. And so because we're so far north, the way the light is dramatically changes the further north you go. Right. So imagine the difference between how early it gets dark in Minnesota compared to the Gulf of Mexico. Right. That's Alaska. So it is dark all the time. in a more northern part of the state than where I am. In the wintertime here, we will have the sun rise around 10 a.m. and then set again around 4 p.m. So you do get, you know, a good solid 6 hours in the middle of the day where the light is, it's light. The light is pretty low in the sky, so it never seems very bright.
So it's almost like dusk all
day long. Well, it's, yeah, a little bit more than dusk all day long. There are long periods that do seem very dusk-like. and because of that, you feel like it just feels a little dark all the time. It can be very hard for people who have full-time jobs to get any time outside during daylight because it's, you know, daylight in the middle of your work day. I am fortunate. I work an East Coast schedule on purpose, actually, so that 1 p.m. East Coast or 1 p.m. local time, I'm done for the day and I can get some time outside in the daylight if my schedule, you know, kids and whatever allows. More often than not, I do get daylight outside time in the winter on purpose, but not everybody does. In the farther north part of the states, there are places in Alaska where the sun sets in, you know, November and you see it again in March. So, that's a lot. That's a lot of darkness. The flip side of that, of course, is you get that for summer, but it's all light. And so here where I live, because you experience light differently than you experience darkness. You know, imagine when the sun sets, not actually gone, right? There's this period of long dusk before and after it. So in the summertime, it does seem that it's light for 24 hours, even though technically speaking, the sun has set and is yet to rise again. And but there's that sort of dusky before and after light that you do experience. And that's around summer solstice, which is, of course, in June. And we call it, you know, the land of the midnight sun. That's why.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, I can't even imagine being in a place where it's like this dark all the time, too. Cause like you think about like needing vitamin D in your skin and how much light does bring joy and happiness to you. Like all these scientific studies about that. So. Yeah. I mean, hopefully all those people in those areas are using like those UV lights to help them.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I am more attuned now to the depth of that, like to how that darkness weighs on me than I used to be. I notice now in December that I feel sluggish, that I feel like it, whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. I don't have to go to the gym today. Just things like that, where I just don't want to get off the couch. I notice those things now. When we first moved here, I didn't notice that. But to the extent that I notice it, notwithstanding, when you really notice how you felt in the dark is when it's light again. So this beaming face that you can see because we're on video right now, is just, listeners have to imagine me glowing, okay? This is because it is sunny and light outside, and it is March. And in March, the sun is creeping higher and higher in the sky. And because of that, the snow is now reflecting light the way it didn't last month at all, ever. And it feels very bright outside. And now you have to wear sunglasses. There's a day in late February, early March each year that it's like one specific day. And I know this because it shows up on my Facebook memories over and over again. Okay. After it happens, I realize, oh yeah, this is that day where I'm sitting at my desk in front of my window where I work, and the light becomes high enough in the sky to blind me in the window. Okay. And I think, oh, this light is so annoying. And I have to close my curtain a little bit. And as I do that, I think, oh, the light is annoying. It's back. Okay. And it's this wonderful moment where you realize the sun is back enough to blind me while I'm working. It's the best day. And so, and then I take a picture of it. Then I put it on social media. And then I look at my Facebook memories and I see, boop, 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 done this before. So,
right. Blinded by the light.
Exactly. I should mark my calendar. Day of blinding light.
You know? Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it is like so amazing how much you realize. Like you don't really know what you had till it's gone for a while.
That's right. There's right. A song about that too.
Right.
Exactly. You know what I should do is I should buy myself a new pair of Gooders. I'm always in the like looking for an excuse to do that. And I should gift wrap them. And on the day of blinding light, which is my new official holiday, I'm going to just give myself a little present. That's what I'm going to do starting next year.
Thank you for helping me. Gooders? What did you say? Gooders?
Oh, Gooders. They are, okay, it's the sunglasses. They're $25. That's why they're so amazing. It's a price point where you feel like you're treating yourself, but also not spending all of your money ever. Okay. It's a dangerous price point because it feels like you could maybe buy more than one pair. Okay. So they tend to be very like neon bright colors. They're like reflective UV glasses. I love them for running and they're very lightweight. And because they're not super expensive, if you say sit on them or run over them with your car or lose them on the trail, it's not the worst thing that's ever happened to you. Okay. And so I'm obsessed and I love their colors and I'm just would really like a new excuse to buy one. So
little present light celebration.
Me. That's right. Day yeah. of blinding light.
Yes. Yes. So I'm so curious too, to know like how living in Alaska and the whole outside challenge has influenced your family and evolved over time, like how it's affected your boys and your husband, especially.
Yeah, so I think we'll work backwards. For my husband, who has always been more adventurous than I am, that's just what his personality is. He has grown in the number of things he wants to do outside and trying new things and in the amount of time he spends doing them. So
he's probably become like a big gear junkie and wants to buy all the things.
Oh my God, the biggest gear junkie of all the things. Yeah. I was just joking with a friend the other day that also outside my office window is a shed that I do not ever go in. I have no reason to go in this shed. Okay. It's where he keeps stuff. Who knows?
It's his man cave.
Let me just say the stuff that's in there. Sometimes I'll be sitting at my office desk, like on a conference call. I'm sure people are like, what is happening with her face? Because I'm like, I sit up like a gopher watching out the window while he like parades by with like arms full of junk. Who knows what? Like, where did this come from? And yeah, he's a gear junkie. He runs a nonprofit called Remedy Alpine, serves other veterans, and is a part of that. Legitimately has a lot of gear, you know, for the nonprofit kind of business, but
yeah.
Is it legitimate? Anyway, right. Just a question for the universe. And so then the other thing though, is that he, because I think this is just sort of maybe a macho army dude mindset. He doesn't always think that he needs help learning something, but because I spend so much time outside and I have absolutely no problem saying I need help learning something, like I will hire a instructor in one hot second because skiing is hard and it's easier when someone shows you how to do it. That's all there is to that. So he, I think, has given himself permission to also be instructed by people who know more than he is, whether that is hiring a instructor or finding someone to teach him. You don't just have to muscle your way through learning something. This guides are in the world. They would love to guide you. It's in the title. And so we really do lean on our friends who know more than we do, or guides or instructors to help us with that. And he's gotten a lot better at doing that. For example, we just both took ski lessons this winter through our local nonprofit ski club. Extremely affordable. If you live somewhere where there's skiing, you probably have a nonprofit ski club nearby you. And it will likely offer lessons, and they are offered by volunteers who have spent their lifetime doing this and would just love to tell you how. And so that's what we did. It's like $15 a lesson. And this gentleman who has been skiing for, I'm not kidding, 70 years, got out there and schooled me in both the literal and sort of sarcastic sense of the word on skate skiing and showed us how to do it. And now it's a sport that I can enjoy because I'm not spending the entire time wondering why this is so incredibly hard. Now I know why it's so hard. It's just hard. But practice does help. And so he showed me how to do it for my kids.
Skiing is hard. I totally do the pizza slicing, like the whole
full-time pizza. 24/7 pizza. People also call that snowplow, but not me. Not me and you. We're all about the like
pizza slicing.
Pizza. French fries. Yep. Pizza. Yep.
Yep. That's yep. totally
for those
me.
Of you who do not ski, you put your skis like in a V and it looks like a pizza slice. That's all there is to that.
And then you go in the chalet and eat pizza.
That's right. Yeah. 100%. So, you know, so he will do this to the instructors. For my kids, you know, they know that we're going to spend time outside. It's assumed. It's no longer mom's making us go outside. It's just, that's what we do. And so my son knows that on the day we celebrate their birthdays, they get to pick whatever they want to do. But one of those things has to be an outside thing. we can do a breadth of things, but we need to also go outside at least one time on this fine day of your birth. So, so we do that. And in fact, they are not outside while you and I are talking right now. They are living under a threat of, you know, excommunication if they are not quiet. And to maintain this, I let them play a video game, but that's the only video game time they get today. And as soon as it's done, out they go, you know, to play outside because it's a beautiful day. And we spent the morning, I worked from the yurt next to the downhill ski area while they skied. That's what they did all morning.
They didn't go to, are they homeschooled? There was no school.
No, they're not. It's our spring break.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So they, that's what they did. Although there are lots of homeschool families that do that. They were all there. So yeah, you know, and then for me, this is just a natural part of my life now, you know, I don't even necessarily have to think about getting outside every day. It's just something that happens. And on the days that it's harder to make happen, is just a natural part of my thought process. It's kind of like eating dinner. Okay, have we had dinner? Have we gone outside? You know, it's just a part of my rhythm. And so I do sometimes devote thought to exactly what will we do outside? But, you know, how is the weather? And it's obviously a lot harder in the wintertime because you can't just sit on your porch. In the summertime, if I'm short on time or don't have a plan, I will read a book on my porch. Awesome. But in the wintertime, it's 33 degrees. Your porch isn't that fun in 33. What are you going to go do? How's the snow? If you go for a walk, you're just going to post hole through to your knees. If you don't live in snow, you don't know this, but my gosh, that's not that fun. It's just not fun. Also, when you do that on a snow path, it ruins the path for the rest of the time. Because now, let's say it gets colder and it hardens up. Every time you go out there, you're going to be dodging your own holes. And then you're just going to curse your own name. Let me tell you, that's happened. So I know. So you have to put a little more thought into it. I'm really looking forward to the end of the winter when I can just easy button.
Right. No, I like how you say it's just kind of like part of your rhythm now, because that's totally for me too. It's just part of your rhythm. And yeah, like, especially in these seasons, the winter seasons, it does take a lot more work to like get all your gear on, especially like when you have kids. I have a baby that I have to dress. It's like, it takes a lot of time to like get everyone out there, but it's always worth it in the end. But yeah, having the right gear makes a world of difference. Like, I think that's a big barrier for some people when they're going outside. They're like, well, I don't like the cold. I don't have the proper stuff. But it's like, you could just layer a little bit more. You can.
Right.
It's not as hard as some people make it sound.
Well, if you think about it, the reason people don't like doing things is because it's not comfortable.
Yes.
Like, why would you do something that's uncomfortable?
Yes.
Well, you wouldn't. That's stupid. So, of course, you don't want to go outside. It's really uncomfortable.
The wind is blowing in your face.
Yeah, terrible. I don't want to go outside when I'm uncomfortable either.
Right.
Which is why on that day, on the Memorial Day weekend, the first thing I did was make sure, you know, was think ahead. Like, if we're going to go outside every day, we're going to get wet. We need some rain gear. Because let me tell you, I hate being wet. I hate it. So, least a favorite experience by far. Rain pants are not particularly expensive unless you go sliding down a lot of rocks, which I do not recommend because they're very, very pokey. They're not going to rip. Okay. They're going to last forever. You will only ever need to buy one pair. So go get you some rain pants. And I guarantee that if you plan to spend time outside every day, at some point it's going to rain and you are going to get wet unless you have rain pants on, in which case you will stay dry and be wowed by how much better this experience now is. And that's true for a variety of types of gear. If you live somewhere very temperate, God bless you, you don't have to worry about this. But for those of us who don't, if you live somewhere temperate, you probably still need rain gear, by the way. But for those of us who don't, there are a variety of levels of gear that you can do. You can spend all of the money in the land and buy puffy pants and a puffy jacket and all the puffy things, okay? And after 4 more years of doing this, I own a lot of those things, although I did not spend all of the money in the land on them, because you can also buy used, you can also do consignment, you can borrow puffy pants from a friend, which is what I did for way too long. professional puffy pants bummer. And so now I do own the gear, but it took me a long time to get it. And I recommend understanding what it is that would make you most comfortable. Like, start from asking that question. What do I need to do to be comfortable? Ask people you know who spend time outside where you live. I guarantee there are people who do that and they would love to give you advice. So like, start there. Here in Alaska, we have very extreme conditions. And so people use very specific products to ward against that. Certain kinds of shoes and boots, wool socks. This is like a very much like in Canada, probably Minnesota, northern climates things, but people use something called a snow skirt, and it is literally a like puffy skirt that goes over your pants. It's a zip-on blanket. Do you have
this? I've never heard of this. No, I don't have a snow skirt.
People, they look like long homeschooler skirts, for lack of a better description. I can say that because I was a homeschooler. And so they zip up, and they are a giant zip over blanket for all practical purposes for your legs. And that makes, I mean, imagine walking around with a blanket around your body. Hello, that's great. You know, so people wear those. But that's a layer, right? If you think about it, that's all that is another layer of some kind of clothing to help you stay warm when you're outside. Well, I was going to say no one's running a marathon in a snow skirt. I've actually seen people run a marathon in a snow skirt, so that's not true. But typically, they're not made for going on long adventures, right? You're wearing them outside for a walk to make these outdoor encounters, these brief daily outdoor times, more pleasant and more sustainable. And it also, as you mentioned, it can come down to layers, you know? So I always tell people, do not wear cotton, like don't layer that, start there. But by putting on a layer, you know, like a leggings against your skin, non-cotton leggings against your skin, and then a pair of pants over top of that, that are not cotton. So maybe a polyester blend. Well, there's two layers right there. Okay. So now on your top, maybe you have a polyester shirt underneath. Okay. And then maybe like a fleece top, which is super cheap fleece from Old Navy, you know, like $5 fleece day right before Christmas. Okay. And then a jacket of some kind over top of that. If you own a fleece vest on a cold day, you could put that over top of that fleece jacket or fleece sweatshirt. And now you have layers on top too. And so wool socks are great because they wick sweat. The reason you don't want to wear cotton is because cotton does not wick sweat. It gets wet and it stays wet on top of your body. And that's just going to keep you cold. You're going to get cold and you're going to stay cold. So synthetic fabrics pull sweat away from your body. So does wool. And that keeps you dry, which helps you stay warm. And so just you can hear it, like, these are just a little pro tips, little thought. It doesn't have to be expensive. You can spend all the money and buy expensive stuff, sure. But don't start there. Start with just simple layerings, also not wearing jeans.
Yeah, for sure. Not wearing jeans, right? But yeah, simple layering and yeah, socks. I mean, I work in an outdoor preschool, and so many of the kids weren't coming with wool socks. And I was like, we need to order wool socks just so we have them on hand right for kids. Cause that's like one of the biggest things when your feet start to get cold. That's like the most uncomfortable thing outdoors in the winter.
Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. Terrible. You know, the other thing I think people either don't know about or forget about, this was brand new information to me when I moved here. And then I was a big resistor for reasons I cannot even explain. And then when I started using it, I was like, you're an idiot, Amy. Why didn't you do this before? Chemical hot hands. Okay. They're called little hotties or hot hands, hand warmers. They make them for your feet too. You open the package, you shake them up. They're activated by air, and they're essentially like these little warming packets, and you stick them in your gloves. You stick them in your shoes. People put them in their clothes. Okay. And although not against your skin, please, because they do get pretty warm. And they help your you know, primarily hands and feet, stay warm. Now, if you think about it, your hands and feet are the things that are furthest away from the source of all goodness, which is your heart, right? So your body is having to work the hardest to warm them up. And if your legs are cold, if your butt is cold, it's even harder for your body to keep your feet warm. If your arms are cold, it's harder for your body to keep your hands warm. And so making sure that you have enough warmth on your arms themselves, and then given a little bit of an extra boost, especially if you're in a situation where you're standing around a lot, like not moving, having those little hot hands or feet heaters makes a world of difference. When we go downhill skiing, I like 100%, I don't even wait to be cold. I start with those.
Right. Exactly. Like start with it. And then if you're too hot, you can always remove them. Like that's the thing about layering too.
Right. Exactly. You know, for hiking, they say start cold, right? Because you're going to be super hot in the next 45 seconds as soon as you start going up a hill. Okay. Well, that, I mean, like we both know that's totally a thing.
Right. I know, but I still like always talk myself into, I need more layers. I need layers.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had to learn. Oh, I've had to learn two things. I've had to learn that I do need to start a little bit chilly. I will warm up. Exactly. And I've had to learn that when I am cold, I have to put it back on again.
Right.
Yeah, because that's my, I don't know, I'm a hoarder. I have a scarcity mindset when it comes to outdoor stuff. And my instinct is to hoard my stuff. So I hoard, like I don't eat my snacks. Eat your snacks, Amy. People are like, this woman needs a snack. Okay. I don't eat them because I'm like, I need them later. I got to keep this stuff. Okay. Then what if I need it later and I don't have it? Well, you need it now. And then inevitably
that's
everyone.
Serious control. Cause I just like reward myself with snacks as I'm like hiking. I'm like, okay, I did 2 miles. Now I get to have my bar.
Yeah. No, I'm like, I've like scarcity mindset. And then if I'm cold, I hesitate to put my layers back on because in my brain, I'm thinking, well, what if you're cold later? Well, you're cold now. Put the stuff on. I'm a runner and I attempted a 100-mile race last summer and I got cold and I didn't put my layers on because I'm not that smart and because I was hoarding them. Total hoarder.
I did it. Like, that's just so funny to have that mindset of being a hoarder when like, you don't even have that much stuff when you're hiking or running or doing anything outdoors because you can't really carry that much. So
the less stuff I have, the more I hoard it. Right. Yeah. What it is. It's scarcity mindset. It's saying there's not enough and I need to save this for late, you know, for an emergency. Then now is your emergency. Put it on.
Yeah. Maybe like save the bear spray for a real emergency.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, how many of your listeners have to carry bear spray, right?
Right. I mean, we only have black bears in Minnesota, but we do have listeners all around. But I mean, is that something that you guys you probably have to carry that when you're just on your runs.
Yes, I do. I carry it. So if you don't know what bear spray is, it's like a super strong mace. It's in a canister. It's like a big can of mace, huge, right? And so I carry it. I have a running vest and I carry it in the, like, kind of like you'd have a backpack, right? For backpacking, you'd carry this somewhere easily accessible if you're hiking in a bare area. In my running vest, I carry it right in the front so that I can get at it if I need it. I'm sorry to say it has to go somewhere where I wish there were snacks. my friends who wear these vests in other parts of the country call that the burrito sleeve. For me, it's my can of bear spray. And I wear it in front of my thing. And and there it goes. I there was a recent post in one of our hiking groups here in Alaska of somebody who encountered, she was serious. This was not a joke post, but I read it and wished it had been a joke. She carried her bear spray as one does. She was encountered by a very aggressive moose, as one sometimes is, especially this time of year. They are very hungry and they can be very aggressive, or they have young with them. That can be another reason a moose is very aggressive. And she needed to dispatch the bear spray against the moose. But before she sprayed it at the moose, she sprayed it on herself to show the moose that she was serious. And
She sprayed it on herself, like, yeah, to
on,
show, like,
on her leg to show the moose she meant business. Now, I'm not real up on, like, moose communication or discussion or whatever, but I don't think that that's how that works.
No, like, if a moose looks like it's going to attack you, you should just get ready to spray it.
Yeah, and the point of this post was to warn people that there was an aggressive moose on a popular trail, but it was a little, don't do that, guys. Don't spray yourself with bear spray. The bear and the moose don't care if you're serious. They will know that you're serious when you spray them.
Yep. Spray it at the animal. Yeah, I had a friend that we took backpacking once, and she thought you did spray bear spray on yourself like it was bug spray.
There's a great sign, series of signs in the gift shop at Yellowstone National Park there by Old Faithful. I'm assuming elsewhere in the park too, where it has instructions for using bear spray. And they have, like, literally spelled out, do not spray self with bear spray. It's not bear repellent. It's, yeah.
Right. But, like, these are things that if you don't do this, it's a foreign concept to you.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, and this woman on this hiking page, honestly, probably should know better that that's not how moose work if she knows well enough to carry bear spray and she lives in Anchorage, Alaska. But no, why would you know that? Okay. And this comes back to what we were talking about. You know, we're kind of making fun, but this comes back to what we were talking about earlier, which is asking people around you for help.
Yeah.
Because, like, you and I are enthusiastic about this. How much would we love to help any given person have an easier time getting outside or have an easy time making an outdoor life by giving them advice? I mean, it's why we have podcasts, right? So the world is full of people who don't have podcasts who feel this way and yeah. are just looking for an excuse to tell you about their hiking experience, to tell them about you about the best trails in your town, and to give you advice on what kind of footwear they really like and where they found the cheapest pair ever.
Exactly. And, like, for going off gear too, there's so many groups that just there's hand-me-down backcountry groups where you can literally, like, get stuff for free. There's, like, exchanges, there's garage sale groups. There's so many ways to get this access to gear that is at an actual very affordable or free price.
Absolutely. And it's about it's like anything else in life. It's about networking and learning about the available resources, usually in your particular area. You know, online marketplaces are great, but mostly they have shipping costs, which we know just keep getting higher. And so you can absolutely use ThredUp to find used gear. I have found multiple pieces of great used outdoor gear, clothing gear on ThredUp, as long as you know what kind of brand you're looking for. Essentially, you can use REI's garage sale section to online to find used gear. Those are just two examples of sites. But if you are looking in your local community, you're going to find, let's say you live somewhere snowy, ski exchange pages. You're going to find local hiking groups, and you're going to find people who tried a piece of gear and wasn't for them, and now they're reselling it. Or moms like Sarah and I, who have kids who've outgrown stuff for exactly 12 seconds.
Right.
And it is not worn out. And now I would love to pass this stuff on. You know, I'm not interested in even putting in the work to sell most of this stuff, right? I just would like to get it out of my house. And exactly. So I'm looking for, it's an ecosystem. I have a friend who gives me all of her son's used stuff. And then I pass on my son's used stuff to other people. And so it's a trickle down. I don't know who's actually buying new stuff in there. Someone must be, but it's fine.
Well, yeah, it's exactly like pass it around. It's so much more eco-friendly. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Such a supporter and just passing things around and not buying new things.
Yeah. Well, and you know, as the owner of a baby, babies don't wear things for very long,
right.
But they have to be warm, right?
Right.
So no baby's wearing out the little baby snowsuit. That's not a thing.
Exactly.
You know? So yeah.
Exactly.
No reason
they
to
wear
buy it
for like 4 months and then they're outgrown.
Yeah.
Maybe not even 4 months.
No. And if they're a little baby, they're not crawling in it. They're not ripping it up. I mean, God bless gear worn by a 4-year-old. Not the same.
Yeah.
You might get 2 humans out of that, tops. But, you know, for babies, why not buy used stuff? Don't feel like you have to go buy new because it's just not necessary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Totally. Oh, yeah. So I am curious, where can people learn about, like, your Humans Outside Challenge, like the 20-minute outside challenge? I know you have a whole thing on your website. Can you talk about the challenge a bit?
Absolutely. So, you know, I told you that earlier that when I started creating my podcast and creating Humans Outside, it was because I felt like I had experienced this, you know, unlocked the secret to having a successful outdoor life.
Wait, was that after like you got the rain on you on that day? Like,
yes, this was after my year outside that I realized, okay, like there's something going on here. And I just wanted to really share that with people. I had done my Instagram post every day of my outside time for that year, just as accountability for myself, and really felt like this could be something bigger to inspire other people. When you stumble upon something in the world that is useful, you want to share it. And so that's what I really wanted to do. And so I did that for a while. I've done that through the Humans Outside podcast since the early 2020, before all of the things. In the before times was when I started my podcast, just barely. And, you know, then had a lot of time on my hands. And so, you know, that grew throughout 2020 and over 2021. It's now in its fifth season and second year. Or I've completed 2 years rather. We're in the third year now. And so, you know, I have that way of sharing this. Well, one of the things I realized was that not everybody thinks like me. I decide I'm going to do something and then I go do it. That's just my personality. And that's great for me. That's fine. But not everybody works like that. And that's fine too. Some people really want someone to come alongside them and help them out, which is why I have the podcast, right? To do that. And that's great. In fact, most people work like that. And so I created what I call the Humans Outside Challenge, where I have a bucket of tools and assistance to help people who just want that help to get outside. And so you can purchase different levels of the challenge. They come with different types of swag. If you are somebody who wants to try to go outside for a year and you just need like a reward at the end, one of those levels comes with a finisher medal, because sometimes you just want a medal, or, you know, like a reward at the end.
Says the runner.
As the runner.
Yes. You know, but no, it's true.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the levels comes with a really cozy Humans Outside buff. And then the most basic level comes, as do all of them, comes with a finisher decal. It's a circular finisher decal just to say, hey, I did this, you know? And so that's, you know, that's kind of one of the things you get. And then all of them also come with this help and assistance that I'm talking about. So when you sign up for the Humans Outside 365 Challenge, you get a guide for going outside and doing this challenge written by me just for this. With how-tos and information and what to wear and advice and, you know, frequently asked questions and what counts as outside. You'd be shocked at how much that question gets asked. You know, does your covered porch, does sleeping in a tent, does riding in the car with the windows outside down, is that going outside? And so I address all of those things. And then every month I send a chat, like a newsletter essentially, but written just for challenge people with more information. And so, for example, the April challenge newsletter specifically talks about how to dress for warm weather. It's not necessarily as easy as shorts and flip-flops, although that's certainly appropriate for a lot of different things. But there are things to think about in terms of when you go on your adventure on a warm weather day. And so that's what that theme is. And yeah, it's a way to have that encouragement along the way from me, someone who's done it, to give people that little extra boost to get their challenge going and to keep at it for a year and see the benefits for themselves.
Right. Well, you know, I like that you brought up like all the debate about like, what is outdoor time? Can it just be sitting? Can it just be like walk? Like it, yeah, it definitely can be. But like for someone who's not, hasn't done any outdoor time, or it's just such a foreign thing to them, I think a lot of people do think like it has to be like a really big expedition.
Yeah. So, you know, I would say there's some nuance here, but what counts as your outdoor time is completely up to you. And so I have some opinions about that, and I talk about them in that guide. But at the end of the day, it depends a lot on the weather, because you're going to want to do something that's comfortable. So does sitting on your porch count as outside time? Of course it does. But you might not want to do it in January. I certainly don't. So, okay, so that's a consideration. And other than that, the rules are really up to you. I suggest 20 minutes based off of that 2 hour mark that we were talking about earlier, but you don't have to do 20 minutes. You know, another reason I picked 20 minutes is one of the things you just noted, Sarah, which is the issue of how much time it takes to get ready to go outside. It takes me like 10 minutes to get dressed in the wintertime. And I need to like at least double my time. I don't want to spend 10 minutes finding everybody's mittens only to be outside for five. That's silly. So 20, you know, that's one part of the reason 20 minutes is my benchmark. It's like going somewhere on an adventure and making sure you spend more time there than it took you to get there and back. Kind of like that.
Yes, absolutely. That's like always the challenge in winter, like it taking 20 minutes to a half hour to get ready and just staying outside longer.
Yeah. Right. It's like, I am not going to drive my whole family to this hike that's going to be for half a mile. It's going to take us an hour to get there and like 10 minutes to do the hike and then an hour to come home. No. So like we're not doing that. Require an hour drive there, you know, 2 hour drive. I require at least a 3 hour hike. So
exactly. Even what, if half the hike is just like hour sitting at the river for a snack. Right.
That's right.
Right. Yes. That's always part of the hike. The snack.
That's right. Any time invested in outside time is outside, including snacking by rivers. I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, and like with kids, like I haven't experienced hiking with kids exactly a lot because we've had the baby in the hiking pack all last summer and fall. But like going into this summer and spring, I know he's going to want to be walking out on the trail and hiking's going to look a lot different with a baby.
Slower.
Like it's going to be very slow. He's going to want to eat the leaves and look at the leaves and like we'll just be standing places for five minutes at a time. It'll be a slower pace, but it's all
good.
Outside time in a different perspective.
It's all good. So if you want to find out more about the Humans Outside 365 Challenge or the Humans Outside podcast, humansoutside.com is the place for you. And it's got all the information there. And of course, the podcast, like this podcast, is found in all of the podcast places, right? So iTunes, you know, what are Apple Podcasts is what it's called now. Google Podcasts, Amazon, all of them. Find it all the places. So
all places where podcasts are found.
That's right. As they say. Yes.
Yes. Yes. So. Awesome. Well, thank you. Did we miss anything?
We have talked about everything. You know, I guess my final thought is just to encourage people to create an outdoor habit. It doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't have to include owning all of the gear ever, although I would recommend doing whatever you need to do to be comfortable because it will make it more fun. But I found by spending time outside every single day a dramatic change for my life. It has opened me up to all sorts of new experiences. It has helped me be happier and healthier. It has made my family closer. It has introduced me to a world of interesting people. Just, you know, like you, Sarah. And it has enriched my life in a way that I can't even begin to describe here right now, briefly. It spans all of the different portions of my life. It is free. It is outside my door, just literally outside my front door. It doesn't have to be complicated. And so I cannot recommend doing this enough. If you need help with making that habit, that's why I have the Humans 365 Challenge, but that's why all of us have these podcasts to talk about this experience, to help you make it better, to help encourage you to get outside and make that a part of your life. It's as simple as that.
Absolutely. And it's just all humans can do it.
They can. Every single one. And if you want to share your, you know, share pictures of yourself doing this, tag me, tag Humans Outside on Facebook and Instagram, tag Humans Outside 365 is the hashtag, and I will 100% see it and comment. And you're welcome to follow me on those places as well at Humans Outside, because I still do post a picture every single day. Sometimes they're pretty stupid, but they're there. So
that's awesome. 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 I love it. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Yes.
You've been listening to the Hiking Through Life podcast. Peace, love, and hike through life.